I'm going to be spending some time in the book of Proverbs chapter 4, but before we get there, I would like to go to Colossians chapter 2 and begin reading just a few verses there to build some context. We've been talking about righteousness, where it comes from, aspects of it that we need to be following after in the Sunday school hour. And I would like to spend some time helping us to see the difference between righteousness and that which is not. And so we'll be working on that to begin with, and then taking some illustrations from history, how that it appears that as a society, at least on occasions, we have not been overly that way in direction, at least by as some would want to lead us. In Colossians chapter 2, I'd like to begin reading in verse 6. It says, "As ye have therefore received Christ Jesus as Lord, so walk ye in him." And I would like to ask the question, how is it that we received Christ Jesus as Lord? Was it not by faith? So we should walk with him by faith. We'll look in that in a moment, but maybe I'll just deviate a moment anyway here. Abraham, when he was given instruction by God, he was noted as being a man of faith because he believed God. That's a very important statement that's there. He believed God. And so it was accounted to him for righteousness. So I would say that it's not really very hard, at least from an intellectual point of view, to be a person who would be accounted, have things accounted to us for righteousness, that we would be considered righteous. But it does depend upon whether or not we believe God. And so, this verse here, verse 6 in Colossians chapter 2, says, "As ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye in him." I would suggest he's saying, believe God. Okay, "rooted and built up in him and established in the faith as ye have been taught." Have you been taught? "Abounding therein with thanksgiving." So if I'm taught something, and I abound in it with thanksgiving. Some people, when they're given instructions, and I can't say I haven't been this way on occasion, have been given instructions, and I carry them out, but it's not with thanksgiving. Okay? It's been with a complaint or a gripe, or what was it, Pastor said, you stand against, or you speak against, or you strike out against, so that would be the contrast to faith. "Abounding therein with thanksgiving." Verse 8, "Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ." So, that's one small phrase at the very end of that sentence, "not after Christ." And if it's not after Christ, then it is through philosophy and vain deceit. I'm smart enough to figure it out myself, is really what it's saying. Philosophy and vain deceit. If I'm smart enough to figure it out myself, that means I'm smart enough to solve my own problems without advice. I'm deceiving myself if I say that. You know, if I have a car problem, I don't necessarily go try to figure it all out by myself. I've had somebody teach me. And there's people here in this congregation who I've gone to gain some advice. And it's vain deceit if I think I can do it all by myself, necessarily. Through philosophy, self-wisdom is really the concept that might be there. Love of wisdom, I'm just so smart. You guys are just really blessed to have me here today. Oh, wait a minute now. Don't be careful. Be careful. Through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men. Whose tradition are you following? See, one of the reasons for the flood was because the tradition of men turned things so upside down that God had to stop it. And basically started the human race over again with a man and his wife and his sons and their wives. The tradition of men. And yet, have we really learned anything? It's almost as bad as in the days of Noah. Maybe it is. I wasn't there, so I can't tell you. So after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world. Now, the world has its own idea about how to do things. And they have also laid what you would call rudiments, or they have laid foundational principles by which they operate. So this is what we're talking about. Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. And the implied word there is after the rudiments of Christ. That's the implied thought that's involved there. So what is it we are going to use for the foundations of what we do and think and say and enter into and all the activities we're involved in? Verse 9, for in him dwelleth, that is Christ, for in him dwelleth all the fullness of the Godhead bodily. Everything that we can know. And ye are complete in him. That's in Christ. If you want to be incomplete, leave Christ out of the picture. You are complete in him, which is the head of all principality and power. Wait a minute now. All principality and power. We're talking about governments and authority. Who's in charge? We have a big discussion about this going on in our newspapers today. Who's in charge? Who's in charge? Now we see here that it says, no, wait a minute. Don't believe this. This is old stuff. When was this written, folks? It was written before Mr. Gillum. Who wrote this? This is old stuff. Aren't we modern people? Very important key phrase that we have thrown around here. Aren't we modern people? But it says, you're complete in him, which is the head of all principality and power. And when we're talking about the head of all principality and power, we have to decide where we're going to accept authority. Well, you know, it's even more worse than that. It's different than that. The idea is that if authority is who we say it is, we've missed the point of all this passage of Scripture and the whole Bible itself. I mean, who created this heaven and earth? Oh, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. We came out of a goo soup and just kind of evolved back onto the land and became what we are. So there's nobody in charge. Or is he the head of all principality and power? In whom also ye are circumcised with the circumcision made without hands, putting off the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, buried with him in baptism, wherein also ye are risen with him, made new, risen with him through the faith of the operation of God who hath raised him from the dead. Now, I'd like to change a little bit and go to Proverbs now. Where we have been studying here recently. And I want to take a portion of this and understand that there are those who would like to spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit. And basically what I kind of entitled in the bulletin is, enter not into the path of the wicked. Who is it that's going to spoil you? Enter not into the path of the wicked. We started out this morning in Sunday school hour that in chapter 4 of Proverbs. It said in verse 10, "Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many." You know, to some degree, there's some illustration of this. The years of thy life will be many if you follow after the righteousness of God. We had a man that's 26 years old take his life here just a couple days ago. Probably one of the most brilliant internet people on the face of the earth. He designed and helped design the device called Reddit. I never used it, but apparently a lot of people had. And apparently he did it because he figured out how to get into other people's accounts and glean information from it. And apparently they caught him. And he basically was headed to jail for this. And he said, "Nope, bang, take care of myself." Short life. There are some things that are generally true. "And hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many." This isn't an unusual deal that's been going on here. We've had quite a few events take place where people's lives are cut short because they didn't understand the will of God, nor the rules of God, nor understand how it applies to them as individuals. But quite frankly, this is not a small thing. It's probably the majority action in our country today where people have been this way. Now, I'd like to go to verse 14, if I may, of chapter 4. It says, "Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men." The idea that's involved here is we have a choice, apparently, that we are able to do as individuals. There are pathways that we can go down. When you go home today, every one of you are going to be making choices as to which path you're going to take. The other day, when we had this ice storm take place, Brother Dave was telling me that he wanted to go to Katanning, and he had to make some choices as far as his pathway. Apparently, he went just at the opportune time when everything froze on the road, and I don't know how he got to where he went, because most of the roads were closed, and somehow he made it through Applewald to go on into Katanning. And I understand they were closing roads behind him left and right. I don't know how he got home. He didn't explain that one. Doesn't really matter. There are pathways and choices that we make. We go where we go, and we take the consequences of it when we go there, and all of the difficulties that that road may provide to us or may not provide to us. And most of us, well, when we leave here, we're going to take a pathway. The pathway that this particular verse is dealing with is, "Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men." Now, the pathway of the wicked is, when we're talking about the wicked, we're talking about those who don't understand the moral standard. Morally wrong pathway. It's a pathway that may be hurtful. It's a pathway which is actively bad. And we understand that when something is wrong, there isn't profit from it. Well, sometimes people think there is for a while, but there isn't profit in that which is wrong. You eat the wrong food, you tend to suffer from it. You make wrong decisions in the stock market, all the money evaporates. Wrong. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's wrong, it's not going to be profitable to you. It's not going to be useful to you. It's going to be hurtful. And the path of the wicked is the path of those who do not understand or choose not to understand that there is a standard for that which is right and that which is good, and are not really interested in finding out what it is And if they do find out what it is, they might find out it would seem to be inconvenient and choose to do otherwise. That which is morally wrong. Oh, I've, by the way, before we go any farther, does anybody have change for a $10 bill? No, change for a $10 bill? No, nobody has change for a $10 bill. I really need some help with this. Nobody? Well, somebody got less than $10 but would be willing to trade off a little bit with, Now, we need to understand where this is going here before we're done. You don't have five? Three? You got ten. Well, how about trading bills with me? 2 fives. Now we're going. Now, she's found this, and so you'll trade those for this one, right? Basically, that's what I'm doing here as we're looking at this. You see what this is? Yeah. I've asked for change, and she's been almost inclined, but as soon as I showed her, she said, that's a $2 bill. Now, if she hadn't have seen that and actually traded with me, of course, I didn't push the deal. Should have, probably. I'd been better off. Are you understanding where we're headed on this? I mean, after all, they probably make more than I do, so what would be unfair or unequal that we would just kind of equal things out and I'd give her a two and she'd give me 2 fives? I mean, isn't that equaling things out and making it more equitable for me? I mean, there's some people have more and some people have less, and let's just trade off and make this all balanced out and make this work here. The path of the wicked we're talking about. I'm trying to catch this so that we need to understand there's a difference between good and evil. I wasn't doing anything evil in my sight. It was quite good. Huh? How many times would you do that with someone? How many times? I think she actually would have traded with me, hoping I'd give back later. But if I tried to do that tonight, again, and didn't trade back after the morning service, I'm wondering if she'd been quite as fast. And then next Sunday, of course, good thing I'm not preaching next Sunday. But you see the point that we're working on here is that the path of the wicked is morally wrong path. And what I was suggesting did not conform to the rules of right. And I wasn't doing anything that was probably what most of you here would say was respecting social duties. But there are people who would say, oh yes, it was respecting social duties. And hang on to that too for a little bit. I suppose that some of you might even say, you know, that's not really conforming to the laws of right and wrong. If I were to come and do work on your house and do what I thought I wanted to be done and finish and say, okay, I want the full payment, and I only really did half the job, I have reason to believe that if you weren't someone who would be normally understanding all of the mechanics of the work that's there, you might find out 2 or 3 months later that basically I didn't do much of anything, and it started showing up to pick up the phone and call the police or the Baptism Bureau or whatever, there could be a reason for me to be standing in court maybe some weeks later. You see, there's this idea of the path of the wicked. In Florida, I think I said this before, but you know, they had all these stone roofs made out of gravel and tar and stuff, and every once in a while they wanted to renew them, and so they'd hire a guy to come in and paint a new matrix on the top to make sure it wouldn't lose the seal, and I just went in with plain old white paint. You can't tell the difference, not for a while, until the leaks start, until the paint washes off, because I put too much water in it to make it last very long. And all of that. See, this kind of stuff, we're talking about the path of the wicked. But the path of the wicked isn't as obvious as this for much of life that we have around us. The way of evil. You see, that which is the way of evil men is that they depart from the rule of that which is right, from the rule of that which is duty, that which is described or prescribed, I should say, by God. And it could be considered as a voluntary path away from that which is lawful, especially God's law, a violation of God's command. It's a wicked act. It's iniquity. It's turning away from the right path. Sin is the idea of that which is evil, and it misses the mark. It misses the mark of the standard of good and right and pure. And God sets the standard. You don't. I don't. As a group, we could vote on something and we could say, this is the set standard. This is going to be what's right from here, this day forward. $2 for 10. But that's not God's opinion. You see, He made us. We can vote all we want, but if we vote contradicting that which is right, we have voted an error. And one of the things that we have to understand is that this situation is a situation that is really, really, everybody says, it's okay, just let it happen. Proverbs 4:15, avoid it. Enter not in the path of the wicked, avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away. For they sleep not except that they have done mischief, and their sleep is taken away, unless they cause some to fall. So, the wicked are looking at you. They're looking at me. And they're interested in our fall. And we need to know the difference. Mischief is to spoil something. They have done mischief. They want to spoil that which you have or that which you are, or your life, or things around about it. They eat the bread of wickedness, in verse 17, and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just, verse 18, is as a shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. Now, how can it shine except it points out that which is right? How can it shine except it makes a contrast and pointing out the difference between that which is right and that which is wrong? How can it shine except they bring the light of the wisdom and the knowledge of God and His Word upon that which is going on in the world? You see, it's the philosophy and vain deceit that is being put forward day after day after day. And to a large degree, I would say that my generation has not seen it and understood it. And those who are older and those who are younger likewise, they have missed the point of all of this. Now, I'm going to get specific and I'm going to bring it to current issues to some degree. But I'm going to use history to carry this out. We have in our day what is called the Declaration of Independence. And in it, it says, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which are connecting them one with another, we're talking about England, and to assume among the powers of the earth a separate, equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. Okay, what's the standard? The laws of nature and nature's God. If you wanted to see more of this, you would read Sir William Blackstone, and he would explain it a little more fully. But nature's God. He's the creator, okay? Which the laws of nature, nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind require that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Now, this is the phrase that we probably many of us have tried to memorize or heard at least. We hold these truths to be self-evident. If something is self-evident, it's something that you should be able to grasp, or I should be able to grasp, that all men are created equal. That they are, now keep that idea, created equal, because this is something that is under challenge today, greatly under challenge, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Where do the rights come from? Says the Creator. Is that in contrast and contradiction to the Bible? The Creator made things, He endowed or gave things to people, certain inalienable rights, that among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I could read a little more, but I'm going to, for sake of time, move on here. We have President Woodrow Wilson. Anybody remember him? Not too currently. He only lived back as the 28th president. He was 1918. He was born before the turn of that century. And so he said that progressives believe that America needs to move beyond the principles of the founding. And he said there, and he said that if you want to understand the real Declaration of Independence, do not read the preface. That's what I just read you. Do not read the preface. Equality, natural rights, consent of the governed, these are not the fundamental principles that inform the purpose of government. All. Now, what I'm telling you here is that we're getting a real example of philosophy and vain deceit. The Constitution says this, and Woodrow Wilson said that. And what he's saying here is that if you bypass the original statement that is there in the preface of the Constitution, what he's saying is that what you need to do is instead you need to take all of these complaints that they give against England and you need to think that's what the Declaration of Independence is about. And he said, of course, these are all outmoded. We don't have those complaints anymore. England doesn't have a king and such, you know. We have a new modern age, new world in which we live. And so all those complaints are immaterial. But if you bypass the preface, the opening statement, the reasons for the complaints and why we have a right to make these complaints, then you can come up with a whole new thing. And he said, you know, really on the 4th of July every year, we should not be spending time reading the opening of the Declaration of Independence, but we should be gathering together, laying forth a new list of complaints and reorganizing our government from time to time to time to time and doing things according to that which seems to be most modern. Now, when we're looking at all this, it causes us to think, whose opinions are that which we as those who are followers of God should pay attention to? What he's saying is that truth is not fixed. He's saying that that which is true, which we care to be interested in, is that which kind of moves around according to the social needs of the day, of this hour, or that day, or that year. And we should reinvent our government year after year after year. Have you been hearing those kind of things lately? See, what we're looking at here is that either God is the one who is the supreme over powers and principalities, and he sets the standards, or man is the supreme over principalities and powers, and we do everything by vote, and what is true today is not necessarily true tomorrow, and we can choose and make anything we want to happen because we are more modern than those who were before. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is that Wilson used the... anybody heard of Sir Isaac Newton? Remember him sitting underneath a tree? That's the common story. And an apple fell and he invented the theories of gravitation. Okay? He was a scientist. Is that not true? We consider him as a scientist and set the laws of gravitation that we still refer to. And he said that Newton understood that here we have the sun, and we build this machine where there's Mercury and Venus and Earth and Mars. I don't know if I got them all. And we make it on little arms with things, little ball up here, and we turn a crank, and they all go around in different speeds according to the way the universe is. And he says, Newton understood everything in life as being like a machine. He says, it's not a machine. Newtonianism is... Now, he didn't give this reference, but Newton believed in the Creator God. And he understood that things are the same in the past, in the present, in the future, based upon the laws of God. But Wilson said, that's just like being a machine. We haven't any variety, any ability to change things according to the social demands and needs of the day. Of course, presuming that God doesn't exist or God is dead, he says we need to take the Darwinian interpretation of the Constitution instead of the Newtonian interpretation of the Constitution. Because the Newtonian interpretation says things don't change. Truth is truth and it doesn't change. Where the Darwinian is that we progress and start out with that which is not so good and get a little bit better, a little bit better, and more modern and more wise and more able. And in these days, we are able to do that which we want. You see how the application is building here? And I'm taking a man who was 100 years ago alive. And he's talking about that which is more modern. And basically, we have other people who have other opinions and along the way, but I'm trying to help you understand, to see the possibility that we are not to enter into the paths of the wicked or people who change that which is true and make it untrue. Taking that which is according to the standard of God, who is the Creator, who never changes, and taking it to the point of view that things, they say, things do change every day. And that we then have to reinvent social order, government, and all of these other things, including the idea that those, and one of the things that he said is that those who would follow after the idea of the Constitution, one of the reasons we don't follow the pre-information that's in there, is that it says all men are created equal. And he says, you know, they're not equal. Some people have more money than others. And therefore, we should take their money and give it to others who don't have it and make them more equal. That's exactly what he was saying and what he was teaching. That was taught by John Dewey, father of modern education. You wonder why things are different in education today than it was when you were younger. John Dewey's effect has taken place. There's a lot of people. We can name all kinds of names, but you've heard some of them, and Wilson is one that's very important there. I would like to close by reading from another president, just a paragraph or two, if you don't mind. And this is by President Calvin Coolidge. Now, you can't blame the Lairds for taking us to Vermont and showing us Calvin Coolidge Museum, because this information wasn't there, at least on the public display. I had to find it in another place. Calvin Coolidge wrote on the 150th anniversary on July 5th, 1926. He followed followed Woodrow Wilson by two presidencies. And at the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, he had this to write. He said, "We are too prone to overlook another conclusion. Governments do not make ideals, but ideals make governments. This is both historically and logically true. Of course, the government can help to sustain ideals and help create institutions through which they may be better observed, but their source, by their very nature, is in the people. They have to bear their own responsibilities." Bear their own responsibilities. That's not Wilson. "There is no method by which that burden can shift to the government. It is not the enactment, but the observance of laws that creates the character of a nation." So if I don't care to observe a law, the enactment doesn't make any difference. That discussion is all over the place today. It's whether they observe them, not how many they enact. "About the Declaration, there is a finality that is exceedingly restful." It doesn't change. "It is often asserted that the world has made a great deal of progress since 1776, and that we have had new thoughts and new experiences, which has given us great advance over the people of that day, and that we may therefore very well discard their conclusions for something more modern." He's quoting Wilson. "But that reasoning cannot be applied to this great charter. If all men are created equal, that is final. If they are endowed with inalienable rights, that is final. If governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, that is final. No advance, no progress can be made beyond these propositions. If anyone wishes to deny their truth or their soundness, the only direction in which he can proceed historically is not forward, but backward, toward the time when there was no equality, no rights of the individual, no rule of the people. Those who wish to proceed in that direction cannot lay claim to the progress. They are reactionary. Their ideas are not more modern, but more ancient than those of the Revolutionary Fathers." Now, basically, I'm using illustrations by great men to show that there's a difference in philosophy. There is a difference in how people look at things and respond to things. And I would suggest to you that Calvin Coolidge was more in line with the biblical opinion than Woodrow Wilson. And that we are living in a day when we could use other people in the last 30, 40 years who would probably say much of the same thing, but I'm taking old people and sharing with you that there's a difference in opinion, and that these differences of opinion are based either upon man's tradition or God's command. And these people recognized it. Can we? Are we going to live as a people who are not interested in following after these traditions, which are... And I would say that we have to understand that there is a path of the wicked, and we are not to go in the way of evil men. That's what the Bible tells us. Probably most who write today will be those who will be according to the path of the wicked, in that they don't recognize God as being creator and authority over us, and this is a current command responsibility which we have today. Where are we going to live? Where are we going to stand? How are we going to understand what we see going on about us unless we take the Scriptures and compare what is going on with what it says?